Hey, it's Lydia here. I feel like recently we've had a lot of quite heavy episodes and quite heavy topics. We've talked a lot about society. We've talked a lot about, you know, inner feelings and the deep stuff and a lot of the struggles. And I think we needed something just a little bit lighter this week. So many of the conversations that we have start from chats that I have with my girlfriends or actually just random people I end up getting maybe a little bit too deep with or analysing life with. And something that always comes up is travel. Where are people going next? Where are we daydreaming of? What have we seen a really cool reel on Instagram about and we're just dying to explore that place? And then naturally the question that comes up after that is how are we making these things work? How are we deciding who we're going on holiday with? Are we going with partners? Are we going with friends? Is everyone married off and actually we just really want the girl group to come back together? Or we're thinking about how we navigate it around work. Oh, do you have work from anywhere? Are you working completely remotely? Do you only have 25 days holiday? There's a couple of different things that feed into these decisions to travel, right? But Wanderlust marked so many of our younger experiences. Even the word Wanderlust to me brings up like back in the day, Tumblr posts where it's written in calligraphy over some really beautiful background. And for many of us, travel has played such a big part in our lives. Whether it was the post-college trip to somewhere awful, I remember like it was Falaraki or Ibiza, or everyone was going on these trips to places with plastic buckets full of rum punch and straws, or it was the kind of post-university trip of everyone going on their gap year to explore some very different culture and really sink their teeth into a world that's so different from our own. Because the thing is, we're the EasyJet generation. We're actually the first generation who got to experience seriously low-cost airlines. Like flying to Barcelona for 15 quid, it just didn't exist for anyone before us. We were so lucky to grow up in our late teens, our early 20s, with way more flexibility than there's ever been before in terms of travel. Like we were very blessed in terms of satisfying that wanderlust that was fed to us on platforms like Tumblr. And now that we're a little bit older, finding that balance between the thirst for adventure and the need to settle down and maybe focus a little bit more and be a bit more serious about our careers and be building for the future can be something quite difficult to navigate, I think. In this episode, I'm sitting down with my brilliant, magnetic, utterly wild friend, Tess. Tess has built her whole life around travel, in how she works as a freelance travel writer, in how she sees relationships, in how she sees the future and thinking about what she really wants. It's all packaged up in this unquenchable thirst that she has to travel. In this episode, we talk about travel and how it's just so much more than getting amazing bikini pics on a beach in Mexico. And don't get me wrong, if you follow Tess on Instagram, there is plenty of amazing pictures in bikinis on beautiful beaches. But for her, it's so much more than this. If you need that nudge to take the trip out of the group chat and into the real world, or maybe you've been ignoring that kind of niggling part of you that is just dying for some adventure, then this episode's for you. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Well, Tess, welcome to the beige couch.
Thank you for having me. Sorry it took so long to get here.
Well, it's always hard to track you down.
Yeah, I was away.
Which is the topic of this podcast, that you are eternally away, travelling.
Yeah. I was just saying to my friend, I've been back in London for a month today, which is probably the longest I've been here since lockdown.
Wow.
Yeah.
I always say to people, I think like the life you live is like the life that I would have lived if I hadn't met Chris.
Yeah.
I honestly feel like that. I'm always watching your stories and like obviously hearing all your stories and being like, oh, that's the wanderlust life.
Yeah. I can imagine you doing it as well. But you like dip in and out.
I dip in and out, but I'm not a full-time traveler. Do you want to tell anyone who hasn't met you before who you are, what you do?
Yeah, so I'm Tess. Hi, everyone. I think I've been a digital nomad for, it will be 8 years in September that I set up my freelance company. I'm a fashion writer. I was doing that before, but like in an agency setting, very like 9 to 5, well, 9 to 7, if you're lucky. And I just felt restricted, I think. And I just had this need to travel and the need to do it a lot, whilst also obviously wanting to continue with my career and build that up. And so I had planned to go freelance for quite a while. I was working in an agency, and the crux of it was I had taken 2 weeks off for Mexico, and then I was getting 2 weeks signed off for Cuba. And the director was like, okay, well, yeah, I can sign this off, but, you know, you won't have any holiday days left for the rest of the year. Mm. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, there's bank holidays, there's weekends. And then obviously a few months passed and I just thought, no, I need to be in the sun. And also I feel like the money that we can make in our industries when you're in an agency, especially for like a copywriter, it's not that great unless you aspire to be like creative director level and managing a lot of people, which wasn't really what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to make money and still be doing the creative job. So yeah, I took the leap, went freelance, and travel was really the catalyst for that. And obviously a lot of other good things came out of it.
Yeah.
Better clients, better money, but the freedom to travel was why I did it.
I feel like digital nomad is such a
wanky
it's a wanky term, isn't it? But it's also like such a buzzword term. So when I think of digital nomad, it's like crypto gurus in Bali. But you were literally, I mean, obviously since COVID, so many more people are doing it. But you did this 8 years ago. You were like first on the train.
Yeah. So I was doing it back in the day, and I was doing it, I guess, less intensely because I was coming back to London, taking some in-house contracts, making the money. Like I worked at Net-a-Porter for over a year, but I was doing that and then I was going away and then I was coming back. So I wasn't kind of consistently, you know, never coming home. And then obviously lockdown happened and we couldn't travel. And lockdown was, of course, shit for everyone. But for fashion copy and digital writing, it was like the boom period. And I had so much work coming in because obviously the stores closed. So there was more money in web stuff.
Yeah, and I guess everyone's sitting at home like frantically shopping on the internet because they're bored.
And I just wasn't saying no to anything. And that's actually sort of when we met with the Nike brand, wasn't it? And I had honestly like 50 clients during that time. I was like running this crazy agency of just me, basically running towards a burnout. But then as soon as the borders opened again and we could travel, I was just like, great. Well, I don't have to work full time now because I've been working as if I was five people for 2 years. So I could be a bit more selective about flexible stuff that allowed me to work on different time zones and being away and stuff.
And then you just packed up and went full time?
Pretty much.
Full time travel.
Yeah. So I was lucky enough to get my flat during lockdown. And then I start, when we could leave again, I started doing the Airbnb thing. Lots of learnings from that. Sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't.
Did you have any horror stories from renting that out?
Yeah, I had a horror story because before I decided to just do it myself, I used this awful scam company. And it was one of those things when it's like, if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. They said, okay, we'll give you a guaranteed nightly payment for whenever your flat is on our books. So whether we book it or not, we'll give you that money.
Wow.
That sounds amazing. Obviously, it didn't work out. And they paid the first month. And then they had my place for a further two. And I never saw that money. And the company went bust. There was nothing I could do because they were registered in Paris. You know, I tried for probably like a year chasing. And then it just gets to the point that it's like not worth it. You just have to say, learning curve.
Yeah, ditch it.
So then I started doing it myself and was just Airbnb-ing it. And I had this amazing like cleaner host sort of gal. And then she actually moved to South London. God forbid, where I am now. And
for
then
listening, Tess is a diehard North London girl
Until now. So I'm on a bit of a London holiday at the moment. So I'm in a sublet until August in the very depths of East Dulwich. It is lovely, but travel is, I'm not used to having to commute so much, I guess.
You're also far from an airport. You have to go into Central, right?
Yeah, well, I haven't crossed that barrier yet because I've been here for so long.
You've been here for a whole month. Yeah, you're trapped.
I have to get like a driver or something. Take me to the airport.
So bougie. Also, I can see that for you. You'll probably like get some sort of sponsor who's a driver and he'll become your best friend. And
some random Uber competitor.
Literally, like Tess is queen of going on trips and then she'll find some poor unsuspecting, usually a man, who'll just take all your photos for you and they become your personal photographer.
And best friend.
And best friend. Tell me about some of your favourite trips for, you know, you've been everywhere. Was it 100 countries?
117 now, yeah. Wow. Which is amazing because I had this vague New Year's resolution a few years ago. I said, oh, by the age of 35, I'll go to 100 because I'm not very good at making like health ones or work ones. Find it a bit boring. So yeah, I just said, okay, I'll get to the big 100. And I'm 34, so I made it.
You made it. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
What's been some of your faves?
Well, I think India for sure. So we'll probably need to like take a bit of a backtrack with India, but that's the place that inspired my love of travel altogether. Mm-hmm. So did you ever watch the 90s cult classic, A Little Princess?
Yes, of course.
I think we've had this conversation before.
I bloody loved that movie. Like, do you want to describe, anyone who hasn't seen it, give us the premise.
So if you've not seen it, the protagonist is this girl, Sarah. And she was like growing up in India. And then because of the war, she gets sent to a boarding school in America. But she just brings with her all these amazing memories of like the forest and the elephants and like all these beautiful like Hindu stories. And I just watched it as a kid and was like, wow, like it's so boring. I'm like going to school in Doncaster. Like I could be here.
You're like, I'm the little princess. Yeah. This is my story.
And I just think it was such an inspiring story of how those travel experiences always stay with you and you can bring them with you into a new life. And it kind of makes you who you are, where you've been and what you've experienced. So yeah, as a young child, I was like, I'm going to India. And my dad and I used to say, like, one day we'll visit. And it was just this, like, special thing to, like, work towards. And then people were always like, well, if you want to go so bad, like, why did it take you until you were 34 years old? You know, you've been to, like, 100 countries and you still haven't been there. And I think it was because I hoped that my dad would come with me because we kind of like dreamt about it since I was little. But yeah, my parents just are absolutely not travelers, which is probably why I've gone the extreme. So yeah, I did invite him, but you know, work, he couldn't go, whatever.
But this is interesting in itself that like you don't come from a really travel focused family.
Absolutely
because
not.
I've traveled quite a lot, but when I was younger, we'd, you know, go skiing or like we'd done some big trips, but you said you hadn't been on a plane until you're 14.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd been to Paris on a school trip twice because I did year six twice. Random. So that was great. I was like, wow, yay, I've been to France. And then we did go on a family holiday to the French countryside once because like my dad's friend had an awful cottage there or something. I'm sure it was great, but you know, I just really wanted to like be on the beach and go to those kind of like tacky places, like when everyone used to come back from the summer holidays and they've been to like Cyprus or Mali or wherever.
You wanted the braided hair with the little beads.
Absolutely.
On the end.
Yeah, which I later did in Jamaica when
no
tan and I just got there and it was like day two and I was like, oh
no,
my
I'm
God.
Actually gonna have to find those photos though and put them on because
I'll send you one.
I love it when a full adult gets braided beach hair.
God.
It's so funny to
me. I mean, I was encouraged by my friend who I was with who is half Jamaican.
Yeah.
And we laugh about it so much to this day. Like we had too much rum cream obviously and we just went for it and I was pasty white because it was just coming out of like the lockdown era. Oh, it was a time. But yeah, that's kind of where my sort of love of travel came from, that film and just hearing about other people's adventures at school. And like, you know, when people emigrated to Australia, I was just like, wow, that's like another world. And anyway, I begged and begged and begged my family to go on holiday. And we finally did get on that plane when I was 14, went to the Algarve in Portugal, staying in like some concrete high-rise hotel. There was a pool, it was hot, there was a beach, so I was happy. But just loads of things went wrong on that trip. And it must have been the most expensive holiday as well. Like, my brother would have been 4 if I was 14. And then, yeah, there was obviously 6 of us. Yeah, big, crazy family trip. And after that, it didn't happen again.
Oh, your parents were like, that's enough.
Yeah.
Oh.
I remember we were meant to go to Greece. Maybe it was like the year after that or something. All packed up. The bags were like in a line outside the door. We were going the next day or something. And then the travel agent called and said, actually, we've double booked the accommodation.
No.
And like a normal family would be like, okay, well, where are you putting us instead, kind of thing? Can we have like a partial refund or compensation and whatever? But my mum just didn't want to risk it. And she was like, we're not going. And
I bet you were devastated.
I probably didn't speak to her for like a week. I was so sad. I can't remember what we did instead. But like, imagine like having to unpack your suitcase and just like not going.
No, that is heartbreaking.
It was like some childhood trauma right there.
Well, you've really made up for that trauma by going to 17 countries.
Yeah.
Okay, but get back to India. So you finally make it to India.
Yeah, so India was like such a spiritual trip for me because it was like, wow, childhood me dreamt about this. And so to be able to do it, obviously my dad wasn't by my side, but we did stay in touch and, you know, I sent some postcards and it did feel like I was exploring it for the both of us. Mm. And it's so weird because obviously I've had so many like once in a lifetime amazing experiences. But honestly, I think the most emotional I've ever been traveling was when I turned the corner and saw the Taj Mahal for the first time. Like, it's just a building, right? Obviously, it's beautiful. But I did not know that that much kind of like inner child healing would come out of me. I was sobbing and I was like, wow, like, where is this coming from? And my tour leader, Ritika, actually thought like something bad had happened to me in the queue. Like I'd maybe like been molested or something. She was like, what is going on? I hadn't, thank God, been molested. And I was just like, oh, sorry, I couldn't really explain it. And I was just trying to say, oh, it just means so much. Like my dad and I used to talk about this. And then she thought my dad had died. I was like, no, he's alive. but it was just, I was just stood there and I felt so small and I felt so proud. And I don't often get proud about myself because I'm just, I don't know, like career stuff or like getting on the property ladder, like it's great, but it doesn't like mean something like spiritually. But standing in front of the Taj Mahal as a 34-year-old woman, but as like a small girl, was just so incredible. Like I just wept. And everyone in my group was like, wow, like it's nice, but it's not that nice. But it was really special.
Have you had any like horror stories? Nothing too dark. Don't bring too much trauma to the pod.
I mean, shall we do the Mexico story?
Yeah, do it.
So I went to Mexico. I was about 26 years old with my boyfriend at the time, who was, let's just say, a big party boy. So we had obviously been, I think we'd been day drinking and we were like down this lazy river or something like
Where
that.
Where in Mexico were you?
Playa del Carmen, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like the techno Cancun, I would describe it. And anyway, we'd been day drinking. We'd had this lovely day on the lazy river. And then we were back on the street, I remember. And we were just having this screaming argument. I don't even know what it was about. And yeah, we were fighting. And I just like pushed him out my way. I was like, just shut up or whatever. Mm. And anyway, there were these Mexican police nearby. And I'm like running off and having a paddy. And then I just hear this dush. And they got so bad. They like push him over the car, hands behind his back, handcuff him, shove him into the back of the car, drive off.
Now, well, and you've not even gone over. You're just like,
let me tell you, I've never sobered up so fast in my entire life.
Yeah.
But you know when they say like, in a dramatic situation, people are like fight or flight. I'm just freeze. And I was just like, oh my God, like what the hell do I do? And anyway, I sobered up and I got in the back of a cab and I was like, take me to the prison. And he was like, the prison. And obviously I couldn't really speak Spanish and it was getting so confused. Anyway, we went on this like hour-long road trip to an actual Mexican prison. But think about it. If you get arrested, you don't get detained and go to prison straight
away. So you sobered up, but not that much.
So then we're like, we literally drive up to like some prison gates and I'm looking like, oh my gosh, I'm in Mexico and there's this like huge prison. Like, what am I doing? And then I think me and the taxi driver had this moment of realization at the same time. And then he was like, oh, you want to go to like the police station, like the holding cell or whatever. And I was like, yes, please. Thank you so much. Bless him. Anyway, got there, managed to explain the situation, had to pay like a ransom or whatever it is. And they eventually like, we had to sign some papers and they released my ex.
Wait, so they literally just arrested him because you guys were fighting?
We were fighting on the street.
Maybe he was...
bothering me, which he was, but it was like obviously partially my fault. And luckily it was, I think we had to pay around £200. So it was in the hundreds, but it wasn't like an amount of money that you like can, you know, not get over. But I remember putting it in Splitwise because I was like, well, it's both of our mistake.
And I then, think that's fair.
Yeah. But obviously he then had some horror stories because he'd been in there like maybe a couple of hours whilst I'd been like going to the prison. And it's really sad because there were Mexicans in there and they can't get out until someone pay, like basically the police are like bribing people and you have to pay to let them out. So if they didn't live in the area or if they didn't have anyone with that money, then they were staying in there for like quite some time. So it was pretty grim. That was like not a good travel story.
No.
And then when we were leaving like 2 weeks later or whatever, you know, when you can like scan your passport to like fast track your luggage or something, we went to do that. Mine worked, all went through fine. And then his didn't. And obviously we both got severe paranoia, like, oh, it's because you've got a criminal record in Mexico. Like, we're never going to be able to leave. Luckily it was fine. The scanner just didn't work. But you know, when you get in those that place of like, what the hell am I doing?
That's so funny. Mexico also is just like the Wild West. Like, we went to Tulum in January and we landed at Tulum Airport. They now have one in Tulum. Before you have to fly to, I think, Cancun and drive down. And we landed in Tulum and basically... we come off the plane and just walk straight out into departures. So like we went through where you go usually to get onto the plane. We were like exited there. And we were in departures just being like, okay, so where's the exit for arrivals? Going around asking everyone, like no one, Chris speaks Spanish, no one knows what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And then we found the security people and they were like, oh, just go through here. And they like let us through the security thing and let us out the airport. We were like, okay, cool. Get out there. We're like, where are our bags? And they're obviously in arrivals.
Yeah.
But we're now outside the airport.
Oh no.
And we went down to the like where the bags are and we were like, oh, we need to get our bags. And they were like, well, you went through the bags. And I was like, no, we just came out of there. And they were like,
you
can't have because you haven't gone through the passport check. Mm. And we were like, well, they just let us out. And then we basically had to go around to like 10 different places because these people had just opened the thing. So we'd illegally entered Mexico. Like, we hadn't had our passports checked.
No stamp or anything.
And then we were like begging to go back through because we were like, well, we can't just be illegally in Mexico. Mm. Even if we get our bags, like, we're not going to be able to go home. And eventually it turned out, this is such a classic Mexico mistake, that as we landed, there was a door that was supposed to, it was like a swinging door, and it either went into departures or it went into arrivals.
Oh my
God. And they had the door set wrong. So we'd got first off the plane and half of us had gone out into departures, and then they'd realised, slammed the door and sent everybody else down to arrivals, but just not bothered to tell anyone. They were like, oh shit, we'll get in trouble.
And it's always so much more confusing like in another language, because even if you know bits and pieces, you're not like following along, are you? I mean, you're just like, I don't know how this has happened.
I know.
I also had a bad experience in a Colombian airport, I can't remember where, but they took all my stuff away. I was like, I'd gone through security and was about to get on the plane, and then they like held me and were like, oh, we need to check some things, took away all my stuff. And I'm just thinking, oh my God, they're going to plant something. Mm. You know, like you shouldn't really get it like out of your eyesight.
Yeah.
And it was really scary. And they I could not speak that kind of Spanish to ask like what was going on. I can only really ask like where the toilet is and stuff. So I'm just in this room, didn't know what's happening, taking my bags, taking my passport. They weighed me. They took photos of me. Oh, I still don't know to this day like what it was all about. And then they left me in the room alone for ages. And I was just like, oh. And eventually everything got handed back. They hadn't planted anything and it was all totally fine. But I still don't understand what happened there.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just will never know and you're just like, oh, lucky to survive another day.
No, that's so terrifying.
It's like, yeah. I was on my own there as well. So you're just a bit like, oh.
Yeah. So do you do, most of your traveling, you're doing on your own, you're with friends. What's the vibe?
Yeah, I'd say I've done like such a big mixture. I first traveled on my own when I was 27. Mm. So it coincided with me kind of going freelance. I worked for like another 6 months or so saving up. And I was meant to travel with my boyfriend at the time, but he just kept not saving up and spending the money on partying or whatever. I pushed it back for him twice. And then eventually I was just like, I have to do this for me, like I'm going. I went to Central America on my own.
That's
which
mad.
Sounded like such a big deal at the time, especially for me. So back then, I wouldn't spend 5 minutes alone. Now I love my me time, but I had like the opposite of social anxiety at that age. I was out every night. If I was home, it was like with a boyfriend or a friend would come over. Mm. I think when you come from a big family, like you're just not used to being on your own. I wasn't anyway. I hated it.
Yeah.
So then when I turned around and said, right, I'm going traveling on my own for 6 months, people were like, why?
But how did you have the balls to do that?
I just wanted to travel so much.
Yeah.
And I had planned it with someone and then they just weren't making it happen. Mm. And I was like, well, I've got to go. And I was like visited by that boyfriend for a period of time. And my best friend came out for 2 weeks. And the thing is, on that trip, even though I was solo, I didn't spend any time actually alone because
right.
I was hosteling in those days. And just stayed in all the fun party hostels and met so many people. And then you get really lucky, you're like doing the same trail as someone else, or you can meet back up with someone in the following country or whatever. But I was really, really scared. Like when I was on the plane, and my first stop was Ecuador, but I only had a stop over there. And I remember just like actually going from the airport to the hotel, feeling so like nervous of like, all the bad things that you hear about a certain country, I was just playing them over in my mind and I wasn't actually enjoying those first like moments of exploration. And then I think I got to Panama City and was in a really fun, vibey hostel, met loads of like other young travelers and stuff. And something just clicked and then the fear just like slowly ebbed away because I have anxiety as well, right? So like traveling makes people who aren't even anxious
for
sometimes.
Sure.
But now I just don't get anxious traveling. It's like my safe space somehow.
Yeah. It feels like, I mean, there's two things that I think are so valuable for anyone listening. Like I think a massive part of the weird years is like you get to this point where suddenly it feels like you really have to settle down.
Mm-hmm.
And also if you have, you know, a partner or if you have friends, but they're all starting to have kids and they're living a different life, it can be really hard to put like what you want in the forefront. I think I sacrificed loads of travel with Chris in our like early years. And yeah, I think it's just very commendable of you to be like, well, this is what I want. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
Alone.
And it didn't feel like a choice. You know, when some people just know in their blood that they're supposed to be a mother or whatever, and they're like, I have to make this happen. Even if I don't meet the right partner, I'm going to get a sperm donor or whatever. That was travel for me. I was just like, it's inside of me. I have to go. And so I will do everything to kind of facilitate that being possible.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, I've had a lot of relationships that have been hard to make work, like throughout the traveling, or I've met people and been able to like travel together with them, which is great. But I think, for me, the kids thing was always like a bit of a distant dream. And it still is. It's something that I think I want, but like still not right now. But it's interesting you say that because I was starting to feel the pull of like coming back and having a bit of a base.
Yeah.
So I think I'm in like coming into a new phase of travel when I get back into my North London flat, which is currently rented out. When I get back in there, I think I'm going to keep it just for me and build it up again as my little sanctuary, and still travel, but maybe not for like these huge lengthy trips that I've done in the past. Because I think the longest time I was like consecutively away was like nearly a year.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. Like, also, I work, in fact, this is like such a minor thing, but it's so important to us, like our clothes and like looking nice and just feeling like, you know, you can get ready and have all your stuff around you. And you just don't have that when you're traveling. And it's fine because, like, you know, I don't wear makeup traveling. Like, you do, you're so much more in touch with kind of like your hippie spirit. But still, I hate living out of a backpack. I hate it.
Really? But you're so good at it. You've done it for so long.
I'm not good at it, though. Like, I do it because I have to.
Yeah.
But it kills me. I get so angry, like, doing up those zips. I'm just like, not again. And even if I'm just staying somewhere for, like, 3 nights or whatever, I will, like, unpack to make it feel a bit more like home. I'll, like, lay out my little products by the sink. I'll put my socks here and my knickers there just because I have to do something to make me feel like I have a base.
Right.
And I think after that, you know, I was away for like almost a year and a half with my ex. And after that, I was just like, I need to come home. I was feeling like a pull and like a craving to have a bit of a base. And also, I'm like a very family and friends orientated person. So it's kind of hard sometimes, like, you're like a free spirit and a hippie, but then you also want to be close to your loved ones. And
yeah.
Something always has to give. You kind of have to find a middle ground.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, like moving into this new chapter, I wouldn't say it's like, oh, the weird year's over and this is going to be like my new normal. We'll see. But the plan for the moment is to, yeah, get back to having that kind of base that I'm happy with, and then maybe just going away a longer trip being like a month or two.
Yeah.
As opposed to that used to be like, oh God, that's just a holiday. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Two things I really want to pick up on that I think is interesting for people. One is like, do you then find it hard dating? Because for a lot of people listening to this, they'll be like, oh yeah, but I mean, all of this is only possible because you're freelancing, right? Like you can pick up contracts, you can work from anywhere.
It's all ad hoc.
It's all ad hoc, yeah. And as you mentioned before, like as a freelancer, you get paid so much more than you do in a full-time role.
Yeah.
So it gives you that freedom. But is it then almost impossible to meet someone because they're like, well, you're just going to disappear
for a month or two? Are you ever going to stay in one place? Yeah. I mean, like hopefully I've cracked the code. We'll have to find out. But obviously, yeah, I was single before my ex. I was actually single for like 4 years.
When I met you, you were single, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was between like the ex and the travel ex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the travel ex, I actually met traveling. Mm. I love that we have like code names for the drug addict ex. the travel ex I met traveling. So that was kind of this miraculous thing, or I thought at the time it was this miraculous thing. And even my therapist was like, how have you just like gone and found a husband whilst you're...
Wasn't it in like Samoa or somewhere
It was
random?
In Fiji, and then Fiji. He followed me to Samoa, yeah. It was, you know, it was obviously that like beautiful, amazing, like whirlwind romance at the beginning. But as you know, it got toxic very quickly. Like, I don't know how it lasted for a year and a half, but unfortunately it did. But I think it was kind of let's just take away the fact that he was an arsehole.
Let's ignore that.
It's amazing that you can just meet someone and be on that same life path. And it's also, you know, there are people like living in London on Hinge going on dates like 4 times a week and not meeting anyone.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, you should stay put to meet someone. At the end of the day, you don't know where you're going to meet someone. Mm. And actually, I would argue it's far easier to meet people traveling, even if unfortunately it becomes a short-term thing because you're going off to different countries or whatever it may be, or you have, you know, this kind of intense like love whirlwind and then it burns out. But it's not like staying put in one place guarantees meeting someone either. So I would not use that as a reason to kind of stay put and hold back. Yeah.
It's also, I feel like it's one of those narratives that you're such an epitome of someone who's chosen like a very different fig on the tree in that analogy, and like you've chosen this life. And often people think that women especially who travel like consistently, it feels like there's a story of like, oh well, you're running away from something, or like you're scared to commit, but it feels like it's not that for you.
And my parents have definitely had that worry, I think. But I think if you're miserable in your heart, you're still going to be miserable if you go traveling, right? It can maybe like help, of course, like you're going to be happier on the beach than you are in the office. But I think you need to do the work yourself, whether that's therapy or yoga or meditation, whatever it is. And you can do that just as effectively traveling as you can like being in one place. Like I was using BetterHelp last year.
BetterHelp, not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor.
Yet.
And I was showing up like every week. I was having my session, even if I was like randomly in the Amazon in Brazil, like because I was just like, no, this is important. I'm going through something at the moment and I still want to invest in myself. I think what I'm trying to say is like, even if you're traveling, it's not an excuse to not do everything else. Like, I'm still working, and obviously that's a luxury of being freelance, that I can do it poolside. But you can still work on your relationships, you can still work on yourself and see the world.
Yeah, I feel like that's an interesting thing, because there is a stereotype of like the crypto shaman-y like fuck boy with a top knot who lives in Bali. And it's like they're doing all the yoga, all the ice baths, but like none of the actual internal work on their feelings.
And they're doing it for the gram rather than like actually for themselves.
Which I also find so interesting with you, right? Because I think if someone didn't know you, and this is going to make me sound really judgy, I think if someone didn't know you and they went to your Instagram, like you're obviously gorgeous, you have so many nice outfits, like you have all these like cute little posy pictures, and it could feel from the outside as if like it is for the gram. But like, I love hearing you talk about how it's this internal pull and comparing it to like someone who really wants kids. It's like, it's so innate inside you that this is the only way you can
live. It's like a current, like it's just an energy. Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I try to counteract that on Instagram with my big like emotional write-ups and things like that. So like, here's a thirst trap, but by the way, you should do this.
Which, and they're amazing, and they're so detailed. And like anyone planning a trip, like go to Tessa's Instagram, because honestly, whenever I'm like daydreaming of where I want to go, I go on it and have a look.
But you know, it's funny you say that, because my ex, I don't know which category that one comes in under, the rebound ex, he we actually met on the street, and then he got my Instagram afterwards, and then he didn't like align my Instagram with what he'd got to know of me, like in person. And he said something like, oh, it looks like you just have like a really rich dad that funds your trips. I'm like, I wish. I mean, dad's doing great, but like he doesn't pay for my holidays. And actually, I think especially guys don't think, well, we can like have these successes and have worked for it kind of behind the scenes. Because I also found out when we came out of lockdown, there was this kind of like wider group of guys that we used to party with a lot. And then there was this rumor going around that I was on OnlyFans, and that's how I was like doing all the trips. And it was like just an assumption, and like no shade to people doing OnlyFans. Like it's great if that's what you want to do, but I've never done it. And I was like kind of offended. And then there was this really cool thing that happened. So basically they were jokingly saying, oh yeah, because you're on the OnlyFans, whatever. And then the conversation moved on, and some guy was like, started talking about the Reese newsletter, really rogue. He was like, oh, I've spent so much money on Reese at the moment, because they keep...
Well, as in like the surf brand, Reese?
No, Reese, like the sort of tailoring, the high street brand. And they had just brought out like a golf collection or something, and it was his dad's birthday, and he'd just spent all this money. And I was writing for Reese at the time, and had literally written every email he was talking about. And this was like,
this was like at
6 a.m. at an after party. And it was just amazing. And I was like, okay, so you know the shit that you've just been giving me for OnlyFans, I actually wrote that email for Reese that you're just talking about. Mm. And that's how I fund the travels, because I do actually have a job. And he was like, oh, no way. Like, that's so cool. And I think, yeah, people just... I think the other thing is, like, I'm not traveling this really, like, exclusive, like, luxury, lavish lifestyle.
Right.
It's rare that I'm, like, checking into a 5-star hotel and, like, sitting in the hot tub all day.
Mm.
Like, I'm not totally slumming it in, like, you know, crazy, like, 12-person dorm rooms either, but, like, mid-range.
Mm.
And actually, since I've been back in London, I have spent more money this month back in London than I've spent on any of my trips for ages.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people need to realise as well. Like, we're living in one of the most expensive cities in the world. How do I afford to travel all the time? Well, girl maths, but I'm saving money when I travel.
Yeah.
Because it's so bloody expensive here.
Completely.
Like, if we go out for dinner, it's like, what, like £60 per person or whatever here. That can get you like a week or two in Asia.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think sometimes Instagram has played an interesting role in travel, because on some ways you like, it's opened up the window to all these different places you can go, and there's loads of recommendations and stuff. But it has made people, I think, more, they want to go places because they like the aesthetic. And I'm so guilty of this. Like,
yeah.
I always choose a hotel because, like, I love design, but I'm also like, I know it's going to look really nice. And it almost in the back of my head, I'm like, oh, it looks so good on pictures, which is so awful to admit.
But I think that's amazing for like holidays, right?
Right.
When you're like, okay, I'm going for a shorter amount of time. It is about like how I'm going to feel in this place. And you're going to maybe if you're going to spend loads of time in the hotel as well, like, of course, get somewhere that looks really impressive. But I think on those longer trips where you're having more of like a cultural immersion, you're not going to spend loads of time in the hotel anyway. So as long as it's not, you know, riddled with cockroaches or whatever.
Yeah.
If it's got a cute pool, if it's got friendly staff, like, that's all you need.
Yeah. It feels like people listening, and I'm also like, I feel like I need to have a word with myself on this. It's like you need to give yourself permission to go and explore and do it on your own, and whether your girlfriends want to come or not go,
yeah,
like, make yourself a bit of a priority. And then, because you do loads of trips as well when they're in like a tour, so
yeah,
you can turn up on your own.
Yeah, I was about to talk about that actually, because I think if people are too scared to do complete solo travel, then a tour is an amazing way to do it. So I used to hate them because I used to be like, oh, they're so untrendy, like geeks who have no friends must do them. But I've actually done loads now, and I've met some amazing people that I'm still friends with now. And I think it's that perfect mix of you get the solitude that you want if you want it, but you also have this huge group of like-minded people that you can just sort of be paired up with and you know, share travel stories and share company with. Like, I did this amazing one in Utah last year. It was called like mountain based or something. So it was like a hiking trip. And I'm really good friends with this Canadian girl who's actually just moved to Luxembourg. So like, we're going to meet up again. But there was also the most special lady. So I'm just going to do a shout out to Lane, because I'm sure she'll listen to the pod. So Lane was in her late 60s and she was a widow. And she hadn't, I think she had lost her husband that same year. So like, it was still pretty raw. She'd never done any solo travel. She'd never done a tour group. She'd never even done an actual proper hike.
Wow.
And this was like a hardcore, it was called mountain based, right? It was like 5 national parks in 5 days.
Wow.
And it was like some heavy hiking. And yeah, she just like put herself out of her comfort zone, met some great people, like, me and her bonded so well. She was lovely. And I think you can just meet people like that by doing tours that you would never usually come across or spend time with.
Yeah.
And it's really special to get that kind of different perspective.
Definitely.
And if that puts you off, you can, of course, do like the 18 to 30 something tours if you only want to be with kind of people the same age as you as well.
Mm.
But I think it's nice to do the random ones where you're just like, I have no idea, like, who the hell I'm going to meet.
Definitely. And really, like, that, you know, as I said, Instagram has changed maybe how we think about travel, how we experience other people's travel. But ultimately, that is what it's about. It's like new experiences, meeting new people.
Yeah.
I'm the same as you. My best friend, one of my best friends, we met traveling in Southeast Asia when I think we were like 21, and literally just because he happened to be working there, and like now he's one of my best friends still, you know, now we're 33.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so special. Like the people you meet in these things can be so special because they're like-minded and adventurous and like.
Exactly. And the memories that you share together, it's like, it feels more like iconic than just like, oh, we went for coffee in London. Do you know what I mean? It's like that thing. It's like drawing you together because no one else has experienced this kind of thing.
Totally. So you talked about that now you've had this yearning and you're going to be like back in London for a while.
Yeah.
Do you find that, like, how do other people feel about your travels? Because you said, obviously, you know, you miss family. You must miss quite a lot of events and things.
Yeah, well, I would say one of the main reasons that I've come back is because my sister just had a baby.
Yeah.
So I'm an auntie.
So exciting.
And I think it was that, yeah, that family pull of wanting to be closer and obviously not miss out on those special first kind of moments. So I did miss my sister's baby shower, which I don't think went down too well, but I was kind of like, I'm coming back for the birth.
Yeah.
And I was actually in China. China was my last stop before I got back to London. And I thought that I was going to have like no, you know, network, you know, WhatsApp and stuff like that. Mm. And I was making my whole family get WeChat. And I was like, you have to give me updates. Like, I need to know if the baby comes early. Anyway, she ended up coming late and I was back in London, like ready to be there. And yeah, I think it's just, it's important to like show up for family for those milestones. Mm. So, and London's my home. Like, yeah, most, even though I'm not from there, my parents still live up north, but yeah, my sisters and friends are here, so.
Yeah. Can you tell me about the 3-month thing? Because I feel like this is such a good ideology. Yeah. In general, I feel like a lot of people should think about their life like this.
Yeah. So the 3 months chapter came from Susie, love you, my older friend that I met in South India. Basically, before I found out that my sister was pregnant, I went through like quite a hard year, as you know, like horrific breakup, all these things. And I was about to like up and move to Spain, even though I wasn't sure I really wanted to do that on my own, but I was just like, you know, probably running away. And then my sister told my other sister and I'm pregnant. So then was the whole like, oh my God, I have to go to India because I just need to do that trip before she has the baby, which turned into like Bhutan and China and Nepal. Anyway, I had obviously then committed to moving back to London, which was all well and good. And I was like, oh, my decision's been made for me kind of thing. That's where I need to be. It's all good. And then, of course, I'm in India. It's such a spiritual place. You know, you're like on the beach. Everyone's like doing these group yoga sessions. I was like waking up with the sun, meditating. Like I was in such a like beautiful space, and I'd healed so much from this like horrible year that I'd had the year before. And then I started freaking out about coming back to London and was just like, am I just doing this like for my sister, not for me? Do I want to be there? Like I hate London. It's cold. It's grey. And I was spiraling basically. And then my friend Susie just said, you're clearly the kind of person that always has like an end goal, and you're always thinking like, what should my life look like, you know, when it's sort of finished kind of thing. And she was like, what, you're putting so much pressure on the move back to London, but nothing's forever, or like nothing has to be forever. So why don't you just start thinking in 3 months chapters, move back to London, say, right, I'm here for 3 months. I'm going to make the most of it, you know, see everyone, whatever. And then at the end of the 3 months, assess, like, am I happy? Is it going well? Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. I'll stay another 3 months. And it sounds so simple, but it's really helped me because I project loads and I'm always like, oh, like I bought my flat, but then it's like, I know that it's not my family home, for example. It's just like a tiny one bed in Islington. So then I started being like, well, where am I eventually going to live? And it doesn't really make sense with the kind of lifestyle I have, which is very like live in the moment kind of thing. Mm. But there's always that, like those cogs in the back of my mind is like, where is this leading to?
Right.
And so I think, yeah, to basically, you can't you can't control everything, right? And when you plan things, often the plan doesn't go to plan anyway. So I think the 3-month thing just helps people that have like loads of ideas and want to do everything all at once, just like recenter and like live in the moment a bit.
Yeah. And be more conscious. Like, I love that because I think I've been doing that recently, like since I've been in London, obviously got married. And
yeah,
I think I've been thinking, I mean, my big thing is like babies, right? I keep being like, well, we should buy a house because we want to have a baby. And like, well, when should we have the baby? Like, when's a good time to have a baby? Well, I want to do this trip. I want to go surfing. And it's like, I've been really guilty of just looking so far ahead. And it's like, well, we're not even like trying to have a kid yet. Yeah. You know? It's like, and then you, it might take some time, and then you're pregnant for a year, and you can actually almost lose so much life in that time from where you are to just planning and like getting fixated on the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you lose the life in the middle, the actual living of the time.
Exactly. Yeah. You're missing the present because you're either looking back or looking forward, and everyone does it to some extent.
Yeah.
But yeah. The 3 months chapters is good for me because I think it just, it's like a bite-sized piece. You're not going to stress out that it's like forever and you're going to get stuck in London and you don't want to be there or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's actually made me like thrive a bit more. Like, I've been so busy since I've been back and doing it all. Not work-wise, sadly. but yeah, no, it's good. I'm going to try and keep doing that. And just, it also means that you can like check in where you're at, right? So when I've been back for 3 months, I'll have a little reflective period of like, did it go the way I thought it was going to go? Like, has it been better? Has it been worse?
Yeah, it's so nice.
Mm.
I asked out on the Instagram, I asked out some kind of random questions. To be honest,
yeah.
I didn't get loads of responses, but I always, as I said, I always have thought of you as like the life that I would live if I hadn't like really settled down with Chris. And, you know, maybe sacrifices were made that shouldn't have been. Maybe I should have made other sacrifices. And, you know, it's always choosing a path.
Yeah.
But I asked out to people, like, what did I say? I said, if you were to daydream an alternative life or a future stage of life, what would it look like?
Mm.
And one person wrote in and said, a job that involves being outdoors every day, maybe somewhere warm.
Yeah, perfect.
I feel like that's so up your street because you just...
I love being outside.
And you're always cold.
I know. It is, has actually been so hard moving back.
Anyone listening to this, Tess's face is so serious right now. She's like, yeah, it is actually very traumatic. This girl literally, I remember every time you came back to London when it would be like for a weekend, you'd text me and be like, it would be this voice note going, I can't so be here.
Dramatic.
I'm so cold. And I'm like, babe, you're wearing leggings. Like, buy a big coat.
I was not wearing leggings. I know, I just went up north this week to bring some more clothes back. And I had the hot water bottle out.
You love your hot water bottle.
Oh, no.
It cracks me up.
And then I sometimes sit with the hairdryer and just like blow dry my body. It's actually a problem. And it's getting worse with age. I was born cold, but I think it's getting like more severe as I get older. I just can't tolerate it.
No. Well, we'll see how many 3-month stages you get through in London. The winter will be cold.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that. I think weather and being outdoors,
outside is
like
so
wants.
Key.
It's what we
yeah.
want.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I felt like really fed up the other day, and my new place is next to East Dulwich Park, which is really nice.
So nice.
And I just popped out and instantly my mood just lifted. And I was like, yeah, more people need to just get outside when 100%. You have those little blips. Because sometimes you just get so like stuck in the moment and you're behind your computer screen or whatever. But actually, if you just take even just 10 minutes, go and like look at some flowers, it really cheers you up.
It's so true. And a shout out to another writer in Austin on wildlife, our friend Bert, who is currently on his like hot girl year traveling with his boyfriend.
And I'm loving it because he's doing like a route I've done previously.
So I
keep checking in like, oh, did you go here? Did you go here? So great.
And he said his alternative life would be being a leader and making people fall in love with nature to the ends of protecting it. That's Austin on wildlife. And actually, I fucking love to see a bitch just go after their dream in the years that we're in.
Yeah.
It's my favourite thing. Like, I think it's so easy to hunker down and just sort of push all that stuff to the back of your mind.
Mm.
But he's gone out. He's bought a amazing photography camera.
Yeah.
He's, like, trekking through the jungle, taking wildlife photographs and sharing, like, these really funny stories on his Instagram. And it's, like, this realisation. He messaged me and was just like, I just can't come back to London and go back to the same life.
Really?
And I was like, yeah. I hear you. Like, you've got such big goals. Mm. And I think that's a massive thing in the weird years, isn't it? Is that people have often been working for 10 or so years in one career now.
Yeah.
And I think so many of us are getting to the point where we're like, this is just not it.
Yeah. How long has he been traveling now?
When did he go? I think he went, I want to say November last year.
Right. Because it will be interesting to see how that changes, like, the longer he's out, whether he gets to that point of just like, oh my God, I hate this backpack. Like, I can't wait to get back, or whether that's just me.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you also get to a point where you're just like, the trip's not even good anymore. Like, it is, but you also get, you kind of get numb to the beauty if you're if you're away too long and you're just being spoiled day after day with these like amazing scenes or animal sightings or like great meetups with locals. And that's when you have to like pull back, I think, and be like, okay, I need to maybe go home and then come back out to appreciate it again.
Right.
That's how I feel anyway. Otherwise, it's just like, hi. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that totally makes sense. I guess it's also like, you know, you're just flooded with dopamine for such a long time of seeing amazing stuff that it's like...
And you know you're going to have to do that crash when you get back, but like eventually you'll find like a bit of an equilibrium.
Yeah. And it's funny, somebody else wrote in with a question, but I feel like you're not going to be able to answer this. We'll see. She said, packing light and efficiency tips across different climates and countries.
Oh, gosh.
You've already... told us your dismay and how much you hate your
well
backpack.
Yeah, I hate it, but okay, my tips. Well, packing cubes 1000%. I was actually a late adopter of the packing cube.
I love the packing cube,
but they're just amazing, especially in a backpack when you know you can't get to everything all at once. If you just have okay, like my bikinis and underwear's in that one, my like cargo pants are in that one, whatever it may be. And then you don't have to take absolutely everything out, especially when it's a bit of like a Tetris game and it's hard to get it back in. The thing that I don't scrimp on when I'm packing is sunglasses. And when I overlanded in Africa for 3 months, I had 10 pairs of sunglasses.
10 pairs!
Which is outrageous, but no, can I just say, I wore basically the same ugly-ass outfit for months on end. It was just like a little pair of shorts and a vest top, or like an all-in-one if I was feeling bold.
Yeah.
Like a little... what are they called?
Like a bodysuit.
Bodysuit sort of thing. All in one, like a onesie. And I just know what I'm like. And so I was like, well, if I can have these like little accessories, like, yes, everyone else thinks it's so extra. And they would be, every time I would get on the little 4x4 bus, they'd be like, oh, another pair. But it just made me feel nice. And it, like, I was putting on like filthy, dirty, damp clothes constantly because like half the time we couldn't wash anything. And so just to have that little bit of, not even glamour, but just like a little fashionable nod just made me feel more at home.
That's actually a great tip, to be fair.
Like little accessories or hair clips,
whatever.
Obviously, don't take your, you know, I mean, I did have some like scuffed up Pradas, but don't take your designer pairs.
Yeah.
Take, you know, a crappy pair, but just mix it up.
That's a good tip.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to finish off with Yes or Miss. Dun, dun, dun.
Shall we rebrand it to Tess or Mess?
Yes. Okay. Our last section, Tess or Mess.
I love it.
Number one, living out of a suitcase.
Mess. Hate it.
Booking flights instead of therapy.
Tess.
Tess.
I mean, both are good, but...
fair. Five-year plans.
Mess. I would say if that helps you and you like need goals written down to like work towards, but for me it's more kind of having like a vague idea and seeing where the path takes you.
So fair. Country hopping hookups.
Tess.
That is so Tess coded. Ignoring the corporate ladder.
Tess.
Love it.
Hate it.
Burn the corporate ladder.
Yeah.
Chop it up. Goodbye. And use it for firewood in the Amazon. Well, thank you for being here, my
Thanks
love.
Thanks for having me.
It's been dreamy.
I want to come back already.
Come back.
I feel like we just scratched the surface.
Yeah,
like,
well, maybe we'll do a deep dive.
Yeah.
I need to get like a Patreon and get like all the juicy stuff on a Patreon.
And we can do like themes.
Yeah, you
like
can tell countries. Us about your OnlyFans. Wink, wink, coming soon.
Oh my God.
That would be one way to travel for a long time.
It would be, but I just feel like I've got too many distinctive features.
Yeah,
I could never go back from that.
No, fair. Well, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much. Bye.